The path to cotton leaf curl virus resistant cotton and further steps to sustainability. Scheffler and colleagues.
And this just makes it go forward. This one right here.
Or here.
Or this one. Oh, we're good to go. Thank you. So I'd like to thank you, especially on this not very nice day, to come and let me present a little bit about a program that I've been working on for about 6 years to develop some cotton leaf curl virus resistant cotton, and also just to conclude with a few thoughts on how to sustain this resistance as long as possible. So the project, essentially our goal was to fight the disease threat of cotton leaf curl virus. So this project was not just to benefit our partners in Pakistan, but also in the U.S., where the USDA already lists this leaf curl virus as one of the top 20 threats to U.S. agriculture. So as Dr. Brown very clearly pointed out, it can move and that it may not be in the U.S. yet, but it's a potential. And also a number of other countries we've been collaborating with are also concerned, particularly Australia and Brazil. But it is already a big problem in Pakistan. They can lose 20 to 40% of their crop loss per year. And also, as Dr. Brown talked about, the diseases and insects often coexist, and this partnership makes them even more devastating and also harder to control. So we wanted to make sure that we had a more broad spectrum approach and not so narrow. So some of the things that we determined that we needed to combat this virus were the diagnostic detection methods. We also needed a way so that we could do efficient selection and breeding, even if we were, for instance, here in the U.S. where we can't screen for the disease every year. We needed markers for marker-assisted selection. Of course, we would like to have resistant varieties. And also, because of the fact that this disease does recombine, we needed to find some way to identify multiple sources and stack them. And also to try to keep a few steps ahead of the disease by finding some new technologies that might provide some novel self-protection mechanisms. So yes, we partnered with Pakistan. The disease is already widespread there, and they have a very nice group of expert scientists that had been working on the problem for a number of years. So we were fortunate in that aspect. Also, this, I don't expect you to get all of this, but essentially it was a very extensive program that went everywhere from identifying the virus, tracking the spread, having the diagnostics, as Dr. Brown talked about, and then the final component was essentially how do you transfer what we got from this project to the actual farmers in a way that they could use it. So this program was part of the Kerry-Luger-Berman Act, which essentially was they decided they could provide some non-military aid to Pakistan, and this was designated to strengthen the scientific partnerships. And it was also funded through USAID by USDA. So we had a lot of people that were involved in this project because it was so extensive and we needed a lot of expertise. And so we also had some U.S. supporting cooperators, such as Dr. Brown, who's targeted for the diagnostic test, which she talked about, and also the tracking of the spread of the virus. And ARS College Station was where the source of a lot of the germplasm that I'll talk about in a minute. In Pakistan, there were 9 research groups. We had 13 projects, and because we needed an in-country implementer, we were fortunate that ICARDA was the one that took care of coordinating the projects and doing the day-to-day work with the partners, with especially the administration that goes with it. The projects were at 6 locations. These are all in cotton-producing areas of Pakistan. And we were really fortunate that it was a very good group of both institutes. So there's federal, regional, and also universities that participated. So the cotton leaf curl virus, as you can see, especially if it hits early on, it's essentially 100% yield loss. And some of the really distinctive symptoms for it is not only the curling and the vein thickening, but it also, if you can see there in the middle, will put on the underside of the leaf another small leaf. And it's transmitted by the white flies, which definitely do not respect borders. So it was first identified in Africa a number of years ago, but now it has become endemic in Pakistan, northern India. And as Dr. Brown talked about, it spread also to China and the Philippines. So the first thing that we wanted to tackle was that the breeders had already found resistance and developed varieties, as Dr. Brown talked about, to a previous strain. So they had the experience, but the virus, as in all good diseases, was very good about recombining and changing. And so then they got the new strain, the Varroa, and they had screened hundreds of lines and varieties and so on, and they hadn't been able to find another source of resistance. So the first thing we did is try to increase that pool. And so we were able to get germplasm from the USDA cotton germplasm collection. And there we got Gossypium arboreum, which is a diploid relative that is resistant, and then the upland and Pima cotton. The second source was material that we had from my USDA Stoneville project, and most of the lines were developed for my host plant resistance genetic project. There were some photoperiod sensitive lines from Brazil, and then also day neutral lines from my project that essentially they were lines that were hoping to be a little bit more resistant to bollworm budworms. From 2011 to 15, they screened 5,000 lines for us in Pakistan, and this was done at four locations, so they were actually screened four different times, and then we could combine the results. And we did find that the arboreum, we tested about 2,000 lines, and all of them were resistant, which is great, except that the resistance is really difficult to transfer, and it can take many years, although we have two groups that are working on this as sort of more long-term solution. But we also tested about 2,500 tetrapod lines, and there we also had them at multiple locations. And we were very fortunate that we were able to identify several resistant lines, and this is the first one that we identified. And we tested it again for 2 years at least four locations, and we did some testing also on the viral load within this. And it's not immune. You can detect at very low levels the virus, but it was almost always at low levels, and in the field it tested as resistance, or it had no symptoms. So from that, we selected two resistant lines, and they've been released as germplasm releases. And what I will say is the resistance is good. You can make crosses, but it's not pretty. You wouldn't want to have it in your production field. But a number of countries and also three companies in the U.S. have taken it, and they're incorporating it into their own programs. And also within our own project, we're transferring it to both Pakistani lines and U.S. varieties. But of course, because everybody has what they want in it, and the Pakistani phenotype for their varieties is much different than ours, so we're both sort of doing our own projects. So it's still under development. They estimate that in 2019 they'll be able to release their first resistant varieties. We also are trying to make sure that we have other sources coming along, and we have our Brazilian moca cottons that I've been working on, and basically converting them to day neutral lines first and then transferring the traits. And this looks promising just from genetic tests, not necessarily from anything further than that at the molecular level. It looks like it is an independent source of resistance. And both of them are simply inherited. So we're thinking that it's probably one major gene, and then there may be another modifying gene that sort of gives it that extra kick. So we've got this resistance, and we can stack it, but we don't want to repeat the same thing that happens so often, and especially in Pakistan, is that you get it and then the virus is very quick to overcome it. So we also are trying to make sure that in this program that we're also doing some things to make it more sustainable. And one of the things is the diagnostic test. And this, in some ways, is probably more important to the international community than Pakistan, because they have it, they know it, they see it. But for other places where they're trying to see if they may be getting it in early detection. This is where this test will be particularly important. And I was glad to see that Dr. Brown talked a little bit about some of the success that she's had with her diagnostic test. We do have a smaller project where they're trying to do it with antibodies, but there's a lot of things about that that make it difficult because of the way that the virus can recombine and change. The other thing is you need the monitoring program to make sure you get early warning of the changes. And this is something that Pakistan, as a result of our project, is implementing. And at least at the minimum, in all their national cotton variety tests that they have at a number of locations, they're going to do monitoring on that basis. Stacking the sources helps. And then, of course, being able to make it practical by having the markers. What we also have found in some of them that it appeared that although our lines were resistant to the Borrelia strain, that they may in some way not be as resistant to the previous strain that was predominant in Pakistan, which was the Multan strain. So we started 2 years ago to actually cross our resistance into some of the varieties that they developed against the Multan strain. So maybe we can take care of that problem. And then the final two things that I'll just make a couple comments about is essentially we want to make sure that we have best management practices also in place, because they're just as important as the resistance, not only to make the resistance as effective as possible, but also to make sure it lasts as long as possible. And then finally, to see if we can find some new ways to create resistance. So with the best management practices, there's a lot of things in Pakistan that you have to look at when you're doing it. And just a few of them is that, especially in the small farmer fields, they tend to have not just the cotton, but they'll have their, as you can see, I don't have my pointer, but down in between the two of them, there's cucumber plants. Just over to the side, they have a small garden that has some tomatoes and peppers. And then over here on this side, there's a hollyhock-looking kind of plant. And all these are also exceptional alternate hosts. So the leaf curl virus disease, it's not very particular. It really likes cotton, but there's about at least 60 other hosts that it's perfectly happy on. So one of the other things is to convince them that they need to kind of clean up their fields and so on and perhaps not have quite so many things. But that one may be a losing battle. The other one is a very effective method is if you can early plant the cotton so that by the time the whitefly builds up and the disease is at its peak, that they're already far enough along in the growing season and their development that it has a minimal impact. The problem is that most of the farmers, especially the smaller ones, have to grow two crops a year. They rotate cotton and wheat. And if you wait till the wheat's harvested in May and then plant the cotton the end of May or beginning of June, that makes it the perfect target for the disease. So another part of our project was to find some agronomic practices that will allow them to essentially plant the cotton directly into the wheat. They harvest the wheat and chop it off, and then the cotton comes along. And so that way they can actually plant the cotton sometime end of March, beginning of April, and so they can avoid essentially the peak of the disease. So that was another thing that we were very fortunate that we had some agronomists on our project that worked on that. And then the other thing is that you need to help the farmers know what to look for and the best management practices to help them mitigate the disease, because they're the ones that are at the sort of cutting edge of all this. And we tried several different approaches, but what we've found so far is a farmer field school model, where the farmers actually learn by testing the practice for themselves and then evaluating it and sort of modifying it based on their results has been very effective. And it kind of makes sense intuitively, because all of you know farmers and they're not going to just sit there and believe whatever you tell them. They want to get out and see it, not only for themselves, but they want to see it work on their own farm and their own fields. So this has been a very effective project for us. Then the last part is somehow creating this new kind of resistance. And so far, one of the technologies that seems to be working is something that essentially allows the genetically modified plants to have genes that can be specifically targeted in the virus or the insect vector and inactivated, so RNAi technology. And there are some other emerging ones that are coming along. But in our project, we definitely are trying some of these, and these are two publications that came out recently where one, they've targeted the whitefly vector, and this was done in tobacco, not yet in cotton, and then the other one was the B2 gene, and those were actually transformed into cotton. So there's some other things coming along, and there's also some vectors that have been developed by people in the project, and those combine more than one gene, so they might have multiple resistance. So keep an eye out for those kind of things coming. I think that may be sort of the next version. And I want to thank you, and if there's any time for questions. Oh, wait.
Unfortunately, no time for questions.
That's all right. Thank you.
Thank you.